Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My name is Cade. I have an identical twin brother, Kale. Then one day it all changed. There was a bright light in the sky and time stood still. We were both selected. The pure majesty of nature.
Programmable. Virtual reality, the corrupt version.
A limitless digital universe connecting all shared virtual reality. Digital tribes. I miss what I never knew.
Hello, everybody. It's 25 minutes to 1 a.m. on a Friday night. And you know what that means. It's time to step back into the Brainiverse and complete his cinematic quintology. I think this is the fifth of five. The 2018 release, as selected by you, the Patreon powers, Guy Montgomery and I have just watched Twisted Pair.
Yeah, we sure have. I didn't know. I mean, the name was familiar when you told me that's what we were watching, but it wasn't until I opened it up and started my screening experience that I realized I was back in the terrifying hands of Neil Breen. And I got to say, man, like, there's a novelty value, yes, sure. But
yeah,
I was just getting, you know, when the stakes in a film aren't clear.
Yeah.
Like, the longer it goes on, there are a few set pieces that naturally you get to enjoy for what they are. But
sort of.
I don't. His conviction that he's both intelligent and right that permeates through all of his films is infuriating and terrifying, because he's not he's not either intelligent or competent enough as a filmmaker to articulate what he's trying to say. Like, it's always, you know, the vague idea of corporations,
the Breen themes.
Let's address what do we think the Breen themes are.
The Breen themes are all about systems of control that are fucking with our lives, according to this man who honestly just refuses to not wear jeans. It doesn't matter what scene or situation or character he's portraying, the same ill-fitting blue jeans every time, every shot, every frame. Breen often very ham-fistedly, I'll tell you what I'm doing, Guy, just to set the table for you and our dear listeners. I thought I would struggle so hard to articulate anything about this watch because it was so fucking annoying and confusing that I've got it quietly, like silently playing while I'm talking to you. So it's just on again in the background for me. So the Breen themes are all about, like, corruption. It's the bankers, it's politicians, it's sometimes insurance companies. And they're always represented by, like, four dudes, just four people
who loudly articulate the nefarious things that Breen imagines these institutions to be carrying out. So
you wouldn't read about it.
In Twisted Pair, he catches three corporate businessmen leaving some sort of office block, and he somehow gets them in chains and sort of strings them up inside of a garage, I imagine, and then he says, this is my version of justice for all the things you've done. And then they just, you know, start running off a laundry list of confessions, which, if I'm not mistaken, we have seen before, except previously in the Breeniverse on the steps of Parliament.
Yes.
They go, all of the politicians we corrupted, all of the illegal drugs, all of the insurance scams. And it's just...
And guns. Don't forget guns.
And the illegal guns.
Now, line, what you're referring to with the justice, that's actually a pretty brilliant bit of script writing, because one of Breen's two characters he portrays in this film says this is for justice. And one of the dudes he's got strung up says, oh, are you kidding me? I'm a lawyer. You know, an arbiter of justice. Yeah. And then he said, this is my version of justice. And he shoots him a bunch of times. And they're very unaffected by the bullets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very difficult to discern what the actual intended impact of the bullets are, even within the universe of the movie. Because whenever he fires the gun, he's got an effect on iMovie that, like, it's like if you took the flame emoji from your phone and just like put it for a flash over the end of a fake gun on film.
It's so, honestly, this thing's got to be seen to be believed. It's so fucking rubbish. So he's gone backwards. Say this.
I think he has at one point, because I was watching it, I was sort of, you know, maybe getting a little bit of enjoyment out of it where I could, but also really battling. And then Rose, I'm living with Boner of the Heart, Rose Matafeo, she came in. And even for the, like, 1 minute that she could tolerate being in the room and watching the movie with me, I was like, it's honestly really nice to have someone else here, because I felt like I was going crazy when I was watching it by myself.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be, it's a group viewing experience, because then you can be incredulous to or with someone. But if you're just watching it by yourself, it's such a slog. And honestly,
welcome to my world, brother.
It's probably how he deteriorates the brains of the people who are part of the Breen cult. Because if you watch these movies by yourself, by the time you're finished, you are susceptible, not necessarily to his ideology, but to, you know, whatever the next person or thing you hear is.
Do you know, I think a related thing to this is such are the skills of this fine, aged filmmaker, that I was streaming the movie. And I thought my internet was fucking out, so I downloaded it, but it wasn't fucking out. He just has this bizarre insistence on using all these weird stills that he holds on for ages throughout the movie. And I was like, oh, a bit fucking stuttery here. Nah, that's Breen. That's Breen stuttering. That's the speed of Breen's filmmaking.
I love that test. I love it. Because I was the same, but I had downloaded it. Yeah, and then also the seemingly random pattern in which he chooses, you know, whether or not to use a real location or a downloaded green screen as the setting for different parts of the film. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason to, you know, like at one point I can't remember what he does, but afterwards he boards, you know, quite a plush private jet. Which is
Learjet.
So obviously him walking in front of a green screen and sitting down on like a very plain chair. But the way it looks is like he's sitting in a plush chair. But this very comfortable plush chair he sits like on the very edge of and doesn't lean back at all. I mean, I'm getting bogged down in the wrong details here. Maybe, Tim, we should... I'm on the twistedpairfilm.com website. So I'm going to tell you...
Oh, nice.
I'm gonna tell you and the listener how this film is pitched by Neil Breen Films.
Before you do, actually, I'll just give you a fun tidbit, because I've been on that website once before, because when this film got announced and was coming out, Breen said, if you want to do a screening in your city, hit me up. And I did. I emailed the Breen. And it was going to be too expensive to put on. I couldn't see any way that I wouldn't lose, like, about $1,000, even if tons of people came.
Were you in direct contact with him though?
Yeah. Yeah.
You were emailing back and forth with Neil Breen.
There was like two emails from each of us, because I was trying to establish
what were his emails like?
You know, not grammatically perfect, but I could understand what was being said. He had some pretty specific ideas about rates and cuts that he wanted for the screening. From memory, it was something like $500 US plus 50%. And then if you combine that with what the cinema wants, you know, to put it on, you're losing money no matter what way you slice it, unfortunately.
Well, the pitch or the blurb as represented on the website is identical twin brothers become hybrid AI artificial intelligence entities, yet are torn in different directions to achieve justice for humanity. Do you agree with this blurb, Tim? Yes or no?
No.
What do you think it is?
I don't know, but no one could. This movie's so confusing. You can't glean any... Maybe I'm being too hasty, I don't know.
No. Go ahead. You're not being too hasty at all.
This film's fucking indecipherable. And not in a good way. You know. It's not Inception. It's not even an art house film where you can project meaning onto it. Because it's like hearing someone who's been smashed in the mouth with a shovel try and read poetry. It's like, yeah. I understand that you have the idea of what you want to communicate and you're simply unable to.
Can I ask you a question then, Tim? Do you think Neil Breen has seen a movie?
Flip of the coin, eh? I really don't know.
He didn't pay attention. In this movie, there is a scene with a, like, it doesn't really make sense in terms of stacking up to what whatever the narrative is trying to achieve, but there's a scene which is inside of what I imagine to be his home studio. Like, it's in a, you know, some people have small cinemas in their house, so there's like a projector and some sort of lazy boys laid out in front of it. And this woman who occasionally appears in the film wearing like $2 shop fairy wings. And I think she represents something positive, although it's impossible to say.
It really is.
She sort of appears in this home cinema. And in the home cinema, one of Breen's other movies starts. I can't remember. Maybe it was Pass Through or Fateful Findings, but one of his other movies starts playing on the screen, the end of it. And I'm brilliant. Like, because he's in the scene. And I'm like, this totally blows open. It's the same thing in Ocean's 11 or 12 when they talked about how much the woman Julia Roberts was playing looked like Julia Roberts. And I'm like, well, the whole movie can't exist now.
Yeah.
He's made the same mistake.
I didn't like that.
It's really confusing. And then this is like to try and describe it, even after having just watched it to you, someone else has just seen it, you do feel like you're losing your mind because there's nothing to describe.
The scene that's playing out on screen right now is the one where he goes past the homeless dude and then a woman walks past and he goes, oh, an attractive woman. And then he's like, accosts her. Oh no, they bump into each other and he drops his phone and she drops some papers and then he just starts yelling at her, come meet me here at 8 o'clock, come meet me here.
I'll buy you a drink.
Meet me here at 8 o'clock. He says it so many times. It's so crazy
scary.
Real scary. It's real scary. That's in about minute fucking 12 of the film as well. I think it's no good. And then it's revealed later that he's got like this evil twin. It's like, oh, it's not me. It's my evil alien AI fucking gene splice twin or whatever. And I gave a comedy workshop out of town recently, and there was a person there who I was talking about, like, you know, the importance of how you treat your audience and that you shouldn't lean too much on audience interaction unless you've kind of got, you know, a gag in mind to justify it. And this guy who I had done a couple gigs with earlier that week was like, okay, well, I've got this gag. I want to open my set, which he had been doing, where I ask someone in the front row, hey, tell me a funny story that you read in the paper today. And he had this big, long reason about why he did it that paid off like 3 minutes later in a very kind of confusing way, but it made absolute sense to him. And Breen's done the same thing. It's just like, mate, I understand that what you're trying to do is give us a little twist, and that in your head it's all justified, and accosting this woman is the way that you think it plays out is all resolved later by the fact that it's your evil twin. But you've just fucking cooked it, because you've kept us in that moment for about an hour, and you've built up no trust. We don't believe anything you have to... We just think you're a terrible, terrible man who doesn't understand what you're writing or what you're dealing with, and that you are basically a sex offender and a home invader. There's another weird bit where you just... Fuck, it's weird. Is it his sister whose house he breaks into and wrestles with for 5 minutes?
It's the same woman. This is what is so, you know, what makes it quite confronting, I guess, is because his conviction that he understands all of his characters, and obviously him and the world, he is so certain that he understands what is best for humanity and can identify all the flaws within humanity. You know, this unwavering idea... While breaking every normal code of conduct or social convention, you know, like he runs into this woman, they drop something, he insists upon meeting her at 8 and she doesn't show up and he's furious. So he goes and he breaks and enters into her house, gives her a massive fright. She sees him, they start wrestling, she smashes a piece of art that was conveniently just resting on the sofa over his head, and then their wrestle sort of becomes... not sexual, but like certainly slows down in pace and breathing, and it's like they sort of wrestle each other to a standstill. And then he says, "What's for dinner?" And she says, "It's your favorite." And then she starts talking about how she spoke to their mum or her mum, but the insinuation is it's a shared mum, or that they are a couple have been together a long time, and so he would, you know. For her to refer to her mother as mum would make sense, because he'd be like, "Yeah, I know your mum."
It's an in-law but or something.
There's no clarity.
It's so unclear. It is wild to me, the machinations of this guy's brain.
I loved the scene. This is one of the ones that sort of keep you on the hook as the movie goes on. When he goes out for a meal with that same woman later on, and they're walking along outside, and he says, "I reserved the entire restaurant just for us." And then the camera very slowly pans to reveal about 20 to 30 like outdoor dining sets, what is very clearly on a public walkway with like huge industrial rubbish bins behind them. And they go and sit down, and he says, "This place is incredible. The food, the service, except it's all invisible." And then they start laughing. And it's these like mind-bending bits of movie making where he's almost suggesting that he isn't on the joke, but not in a way that makes you comfortable that he definitely is, or that the joke he's telling is the same joke that you're meant to be laughing at. Like it's
just can't trust him. This is the problem with Brain. Doesn't need to be a ton necessarily, but just a little bit more, like 30% more trust imbued from his audience into him that he would need to earn. Then what we could be viewing is like some cool art. But it isn't. I think it's just like, it's kind of undeniable that you're just watching a man fail in a lot of different regards. Fail as a screenwriter, fail as a producer. You definitely couldn't get a restaurant. Fail as a director. I don't know if he's involved with casting, but holy shit.
He's involved in everything.
In some ways, the casting was fucking on point, because somehow he has found 20-25 people who are so shit at delivering lines to a camera that they make his acting look good. And I realize I'm being pretty negative and punchy, but it's like 1 a.m. here, and I'm up to my eyeballs and brain, and frankly, I've fucking had it.
At the same time, though, you know, here's a guy who has now made 6 films, maybe? You know, that's impressive. The movies themselves aren't impressive, but to be that involved and to actually... I mean, he's not putting out a cohesive product, so maybe you're right. Maybe it's not as impressive I'm giving credit for, but we're talking about him.
I was on board with the brain, and I'm off board.
Maybe to counterbalance this negativity, I'm going to read you from the twistedpearfilm.com website. I'm going to read some theatre audience reviews and comments.
Brilliant.
These are all sort of like a bullet-pointed list, but the bullet points are stars. 500 people came to a single screening in Chicago. They loved it. Ovations. He sort of writes about and deifies himself in a similar way to Trump.
Mm.
A masterclass in ambitious filmmaking, brings storytelling and usual style. It's one of the most entertaining and best works of the year.
Who said
beautiful.
That? Is that quote attributed
none,
to anyone?
None of these are attributed to anyone.
Okay.
Beautiful. The theater was electric. Standing ovation. A visionary masterpiece. I was hooked. Amazing. It was the first time I ever gave a movie an ovation in a theater. Breen at his best. Craving more. We all cheered. It was the best experience I've had at the cinema in a year. Without a doubt, the best cinematic experience I've ever had. Simply put, a masterpiece. More mind-bending greatness from Neil Breen. Neil Breen is an inspiration to all indie filmmakers. Neil Breen is a revolutionary. It was fantastic. We had a blast. 10 out of 10. Breen is the most interesting indie filmmaker right now. Fantastic. A legend. A movie event like nothing I've ever seen. The best movie experience. It was in every way a wonderful experience. You know how people talk. The
just
audience
like
was ecstatic, inspiring, intrigued, fantastic. We all cheered. And then the last one is it just says, and many more similar glowing positive theater audience comments.
Man, the thing that makes me the most uncomfortable about Breen, because I'm just watching another scene, is him constantly throwing these women at him on screen. It must be so... He is a man utterly without any on-screen charm whatsoever. And even like when you see him kissing these women, you feel fucking gross. You feel fucking gross watching it in a movie. And imagine being the crew, or God forbid, the cast member who has to be on the other end of that. There's a darkness there. There's a gross... It's no good. I don't like it. I don't like the vibe.
It is... I mean...
And there's quite a bit of that in this one.
One's
gone backwards.
There is comedy and failed ambition. And
Yes.
You know, but it doesn't seem... Yeah, I'd love to talk to him.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, because all these shortcuts he takes, all these things he does in the, you know, he can pan a camera, but then the visual effects he chooses to use are just off the wall. Like his character that's been imbued with AI, the purportedly heroic one, the twin brother that is on the quest for great or goodness, has got power to leap quite a lot.
Yeah, just some big
and
jumps.
The leap. Sorry. Ooh. Sorry about that. And the jumps are just He knows they look like shit. There's no planet where he doesn't. They've got... some characters are given fake mustaches that are literally, I think, at one point, not even a fake mustache, just scotch tape over the top of their lip.
Mm.
I love that.
You do?
Well, you gotta like some parts of it.
It frustrates me to just not have any idea what's going on, really, you know? So, like, yeah. Maybe should we try and get into that? There's
no.
Twins. So we're living in a world where there's these sort of alien AI humanoid hybrids that are governed by this force, this alien force, and they're very super powerful. And the alien force is the one that's kind of created the species of thing with experimentation. And they're very powerful. They're a lot more powerful than humans. And Brain, this good Brain, whose name I cannot even remember, and I think bad Brain is called Kale or Kane. Just watch
yeah.
it. Do not give a
it was
shit.
It was Cade is the good Brain and
oh,
Kale
really?
Is the bad.
It's ringing a miss. So Cade is the naughty one. And Cade he got his powers like taken away from him by the Force, and now he's on drugs and he has a beard. And that's how you know he's a baddie. Whereas the good Brain is a force of light and justice. And at the start of the film, in a breathtakingly terrible sort of approach to doing visual effects, there's a still photo of some Special Forces style soldiers with big... like assault style gear and some big guns. And
I appreciate what you're trying to do, Tim, but yeah. It is making me uncontrollably angry.
I'm just wanting to paint a picture for our listeners who haven't seen the film. It's just a freeze frame. It's a freeze frame, and he's in. So Brain's in there with his fucking Brain jeans, and he's like, "Everyone, follow me. Don't worry. Come after me. I will protect you. I will save you." And, like, just fucking change your jeans, my dude. Put some camo pants on for one scene so you blend in a little more. And then once he sort of steps off the frame, the still frame of these, you know, Special Forces soldiers with guns akimbo, it starts playing because it's the first frame of a video clip. It's just so hammy. I don't... Like... There's something wrong with this dude's brain that he thinks he can get away with this stuff in 2018. I love it, on the one hand, and if it wasn't coupled with this weird kind of, like, genuinely dangerous feeling, misogyny, you know, weird treatment of women thing, I think I could probably abide it as very, either high art or just great comedy. But his judgment's all off.
You know, what are you going to do? I've got a review here on IMDb, posted by user McKevin, McKevin. The title of the review is Two Breens Are Better Than One. Cinema is a matter of what's in the frame and what's out. Martin Scorsese, Rick Solomon. So he's attributed a Martin Scorsese quote to someone else saying the Martin Scorsese quote. I can say with absolute certainty that I've never seen a film quite like Twisted Pair before. This was an introspective psychological thriller that explored the fine line between morality and corporate greed, weaving gracefully through touchy subjects such as artificial intelligence and programmable virtual reality, the corrupt version. This film will make you question everything you thought you knew about cinema. While the acting ensemble is exactly what you'd expect from a Neil Breen quality film, Breen himself stood out amongst the star-studded cast. Only the greatest actors of our generation, like Tyler Perry, Jack Black and Nicolas Cage, have been able to tackle the tumultuous challenge of playing multiple roles in one film. Breen didn't only meet, but he exceeded all possible expectations. Without spoiling the film, Breen played two brothers who, split apart by fate, ended up taking very different life paths, light and dark, good and evil. Right and wrong. Breen captured the individual essence of both brothers and gave them distinct individual voices. For a film with a budget of only $50,000, you couldn't ask for better special effects. Filled with explosions, daring stunts, and intense fight scenes, the film included much more action than the usual Breen flick. However, it still managed to keep the heartfelt message that corporate greed can be solved easily by chaining up important businessmen in your basement and shooting them intermittently throughout the best hour and 29 minutes of your life.
Yes.
10 out of 10.
Mm.
See, that...
Great
that,
review.
At least, yeah, that makes you feel a bit better because they've articulated the experience, you know, to hear them describe the film in such lofty terms with what I imagine is some degree of irony makes me feel less cross and less alone. Do you think you'd watch another Breen film?
Yeah. If he keeps if he keeps making them, I'll keep watching them. No doubt. I mean, you know, this took $50,000 and undoubtedly, you know, several months to put together. The least I could do is sit down and watch the thing. But it's, he's testing it. He's trying.
Given this, given the same budget and the same resources and the same amount of time, do you think you could make a better film than Twisted Pair?
Yes, I do. Yeah. No, I do. I'm very confident about that, actually. Yeah. I mean, better is an interesting term, though, isn't it? Because what is better, really? If I made a better film than this, I mean, it wouldn't count for anything. But this movie counts for something. So...
Why does this movie count for something?
Well, it's rare that something exists that's this bad that is a movie. And let me talk you through that a little bit. Highly collaborative art project is a film, you know? So it's quite amazing that it got completed to this quality. Nothing stops the Breen machine. So that makes it quite unique in that way. Whereas if I had to run at it with 50 grand in a couple of months' time to make a story, it would just fall into a big ravine of thousands and thousands of other mediocre films. This is something else. And Breen is something else. He's a madman. It's like if... It's like if a toddler learned how to drive a car, I think. And the car crashed a lot. But you're just fascinated at the fact that the toddler had figured out how to turn the ignition and figure out some sort of pedal system to accommodate its tiny little legs. And you were like, I mean, this is fucked and super dangerous and it shouldn't exist on the road alongside the other cars. But it's kind of amazing that this toddler's actually doing it to an extent. That's what a Breen film is.
Yeah. But a toddler driving a car is inherently impressive because that's outside of the purview of what toddlers do. Adults make movies all the time. Adults make movies all the time, Tim.
Breen's not an adult. Breen's not an adult. Breen's a Breen. Breen is just a Breen. That's all he is.
He is an adult. And I think credit where it's due. His unwavering commitment to finishing these things is really like the most impressive quality he has. Because, you know, yes, there are different compromises made at different times in terms of quality, both in production and post-production. But, like, he doesn't let the He doesn't let the fact that, like, one part of the movie might make sense and the next part doesn't stop him, whereas I feel like my instinct would be like, well, no, we can't have, you know, a third of this movie really working and then two-thirds not. We're going to fix those two-thirds. He goes, no, we did it. Like, and that's, you know, that requires drive and courage and a sort of determination or, like, just a willingness to, you know, credit to anyone who makes anything and finishes it. No matter how the project comes out, it is an achievement. And saying that, don't watch this. I went to a show here at the Edinburgh Fringe yesterday, Tim, called Friendsical, the Friends parody musical. And this was a show that did not understand the concept of what a parody was. It was, you know, I would say probably had a similar budget to Twisted Pear.
Uh-huh.
But was like, it was also similarly, you know, is it impressive that they managed to make a whole show that went for 90 minutes?
Right. Somewhat.
Does that mean it needs to be out there? Absolutely not. It was abysmal. And it's not a really a helpful analogy here, but like, it's the same thing where it's like, you know, to see the evidence of someone having created something is great, good for them.
Mm.
But
doesn't need to exist in the world. Is it
doesn't mean
anything?
I need to. Doesn't mean that I need to watch it. Although I have.
Let me ask you about the Friendsicle. Was it interestingly bad, like this is, like all Brains movies
no,
are?
See, that, no. This is the thing, and because I'm sort of, you know, like I think we both have a natural magnetism we're drawn towards. I'm gonna sneeze. Sorry, bad art or, you know, something that's made poorly. And the real joy in it, like it's a very specific type of badness that is enjoyable in the moment that you can enjoy while it's being bad. Like it's almost impossible to articulate the pitch of badness that needs to exist for that to be the case. The Breen film and Friendsicle, they're enjoyable somewhat on reflection. Like, you know, watching the Friendsicle, I was like, to be able to talk about this is the value I'm extracting from it. It was not. It was just long. So their first song, I mean, the premise of the Friendsicle is that Ross, the character Ross from Friends, gets all of the five other friends back together to put on a musical about his and Rachel's love story.
What?
So already, they've just shattered all sorts of storytelling conventions and rules. Like, it immediately doesn't make any sense. And so they... Like, and then they rattle through 90 minutes of like iconic lines and moments from the show, but all out of order without having earned any of the context that would make the jokes funny. And it's interspersed with eight songs that sort of are meant to summarize, you know, feelings or themes. I mean, it's crazy. The first song they do, the opening number, is like an off-brand version of the I'll Be There For You theme song. So they're singing along, and there's this like eerily Uncanny Valley similar sort of guitar jangle playing underneath them, and they're going, "So your life is different from what you thought it could be," and you're like,
"Holy, it's just, shit! This sounds bad."
Yeah, it's just it's crazy. But
have they named this a parody musical to flout certain copyright laws?
Yes,
right.
Almost. So I will say this. The actor who played Chandler Bing really brought it.
Was he good?
He was sensational.
But was it a Breen situation where it was like Breen acted the fuck out of that movie, Twisted Pear, but it was just because he had surrounded himself with people who had never read anything out
no,
loud before?
No, because this guy wasn't the writer, director, producer, caterer, editor. He was just one person doing his job.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think is, like, how do you think Breen reckons his career's going?
Well, he's not tethered to reality.
Yeah.
As far as we know, here's a guy who's made six movies entirely off his own bat. He, I've got no idea what he's like outside of watching him on screen, but I don't think he has the self-awareness to ever consider anything he's done to be a failure. All of his films lack the basics of self-awareness.
Yeah. You know what sucks as well, just watching it for the second time at playing over here? And this is, you know, quite a technical and specific thing. There is no depth of field in any shot in this entire... Like, it looks like everything's been taped on a camcorder. Every image is so flat, so unspeakably flat. Everything is perfectly in focus. And it just makes the whole thing look even cheaper than it needs to. You can buy a camera for like a grand that'll make stuff look more cinematic than this. It's just mind-blowing.
This is the thing, though. He's got so many different hats on. He's not focused on nailing any one thing. He's focused on getting everything done.
Nailing? You kidding me? He's nowhere close to the board on any of it. But,
I don't know. You're watching a movie. You're watching a movie he successfully made.
People are on show.
I can't talk about this anymore.
No. I want to ask you one last question. Are you ready for it?
Go ahead.
What do you think was going on with those cats, bro? Those little three statuettes of cats that kept moving around on the table. What was that about?
It's not fair to ask me that, because to talk about it or speculate as to what they were meant to represent would be to honour the idea that they represented anything. It was just a fun little effect he figured out how to do, and he just would intersperse it throughout the film. The cats are nothing.
He's just using magnets under the table, I think. That's the big trick to it. Also,
That's what the cats represent. Neil Breen discovered what a magnet is.
Breen managed to also three separate times in this film, do my most hated thing in television or movies, where you make something slow motion that wasn't shot for slow motion and just looks really like jagged and shitty.
Yeah.
Fuck, that is a real pet peeve of mine.
Wow.
Fuck this whole project, man. This one was particularly bad, everyone. Not watchable.
It was the last thing you did in your day. It was the first thing I did in my day. I think if we were together and we had some of that herb and, you know, we were excited to be together and watch a film together, this could have been an enjoyable experience. But
fuck,
due to circumstance, this really... This was not a cool time.
No. No.
In saying that,
we
will be together soon. We are going to be together in London, England, for the London Podcast Festival on Friday, September 6th at 9:30. We're doing a very special one-off live event. Tim and I are going to hole up in a hotel the morning of the show. We're going to watch 499 minutes of consecutive cinema in order. Grown Ups 2, Sex and the City 2, We Are Your Friends, Sex and the City. And finally, we will have a conversation that measures and discusses these movies and how they work in tandem with one another, how they compare and contrast to one another, and really, I think, hopefully achieve some sense of closure to, I don't want to say four wasted years of life, but certainly 4 years of life that have been interrupted by this little passion project of ours.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll co-sign that. If you go to littleempirepodcast.com/live, there's ticket details and all that sort of good stuff. It would be lovely to see you there. We are very excited about that live event. The concept of a 10-hour marathon day followed by the live show does excite me. So I hope to see you there. First live show in the continent of Europe. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.
God bless you, Patreon powers. You're the real heroes. You're the anti-Breen.
I'll take you out to dinner.
Let's have a drink. Let's have a drink.
Leave me alone. Let's have a drink.
I'll meet you back here at 8 o'clock.
I miss my brother. I'm with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.